Good evening, and welcome to What the World Needs Now, with host Ken Johnston. Stay tuned as Ken talks with authors, journalists, and others regarding topics important to us as Catholics in a world that's in desperate need of God's love. Love that comforts
from heaven. And welcome to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In This Sign Catholic Radio. Both your prayerful and financial support that's kept us on the air for over 40 years allows me to be here on Wednesdays to hopefully bring you a couple hours of great programming. Just a couple of announcements before we get started. Next week, Kathleen McCarthy and Father Dermot Roche will be out at the Malvern Retreat House for Kathleen's annual Ad Lumina Christi retreat. There are still rooms available, but not in the Family Life Center. Those are sold out. There's still rooms available in Corrigan Hall. The cost of the retreat's $325 per person. And over in that hall, it's more of a dorm style where you have single rooms with shared restrooms. And the men and women will be housed on different floors. If you want to register for that retreat, you can go to malvernretreat.com, click on Find a Retreat. And it should be right at the top since it's next week. Again, that's Monday, November 17th to Friday, November the 21st. Also, a reminder, if you'd like to get an email or two each week with articles I put out on my Substack account at notsaintsyet.substack.com, every week I'll put out the highlights from today's shows along with links to the recordings. I'd love to have you either as a free subscriber or consider becoming a paid subscriber. Without any further ado, I want to get to our guest because we only have him for about 25 minutes here, and it's Derek Roddy. He's a freelance author who lives in Jackson, Tennessee, with his wife and five children. He holds advanced degrees in history and theology. He's written extensively on Catholic history and culture, evangelization and catechesis, and the family. You can find out more about him and his work at DerekRoddy.com. The last name's Rotty. That's DerekRoddy.com. Welcome to the show, Derek. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Ken. Thank you so much.
Sure. And we only had a chance to talk briefly, and I mentioned in the previous hour we were talking about memes and you know, their importance in social media these days. And you know, we can often get quite a bit from just an image. And you've written a book entitled Praying with Sacred Art, Pondering the Mystery of Redemption through Visio Divina. And I saw the subtitle, and I have to say, I think it's the first time I've ever heard that phrase, Visio Divina.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's akin to, you probably heard of Lectio Divina, which is, you know, Latin for divine reading, which is praying with sacred scripture, using a text of scripture to focus our prayer and to open up meditation and ultimately contemplation, the highest form of prayer. So Visio Divina would literally mean divine sight or divine vision, which would be gazing at a piece of sacred art and using it as a prayer text, so to speak, something to initiate meditation and ultimately that higher union with God. I wrote a book years ago on Lectio Divina, and this one happened to come up to do the counterpart. So
was there a particular inspiration that had you set out to write the book?
I actually really didn't set out to write the book. I set out to write a series of articles for Catholic Exchange, a website owned by Sophia Institute Press, and it started as just a four-week Advent series reflecting on four pieces of art that connected to the four gospel readings for the Sundays of that particular cycle. I believe it was the A cycle, like we're back on or will be back on here in a few weeks. And it snowballed from there. The editor kept wanting me to do the next season, right? The next, Lent or Ordinary Time or Easter, You know, so I just put them all together, and by the time it was done, there was a book that they were interested in publishing. But aside from that, I've been a catechist for many, many years, 20 years, and I've always noticed that when I'm trying to convey a point of doctrine, a point of, you know, Christian truth, that learners, whether they be children or teens or adults, like to have something to focus their attention, and images have always helped that. You know, throughout the history of the church, images, stained glass windows and paintings were the ways that the faith was handed on anyway. So I, you know, as a historian, I just have always tried to immerse myself in being able to make those visual connections to the points that I'm making. And again, it just happened that I proposed to write a series reflecting on some pieces of art that had been, you know, powerful for me, and it turned into the product you have in front of you.
Now, and it's beautifully done, and the book's broken up into six parts, beginning with the Art of Advent, and then the Art of Christmas and Jesus' Childhood, the Art of Lent and Holy Week, the Art of Easter, Jesus' Public Ministry, and then concludes with the Art of Jesus' Parables and Miracles. And if I did the edition right, it looks like there's 34 different pieces of art divided between the six categories. And I personally, I did not do a whole lot of this until I made a silent retreat back in 2008, and the spiritual director I had gave me a postcard with the Rembrandt's image from the prodigal son, and told me to go off and meditate on that for 24 hours. And it's something I had not done prior to that time. And I have found myself over the years not doing it all the time, but if I find something in particular that I can, that grabs my eye, to be able to, you know, not only spend an hour or two in a single day, but maybe keep going back to it. And so I understand the importance that you're talking about.
Right.
So one of the pieces that was in here, and just as I was flipping through the book, is the Isenheim altar piece. And we're here in the Philadelphia area, and these pieces are actually part of the altar at a local retreat house out at St. Joseph's in the Hills and St. Joseph's Chapel. They recreated it in its multiple panels, and then the inset in the altar, which is actually beautiful. So the meditation that's here and the description, at least for those of us local here in the Philadelphia area that make retreats out there, should be enthused to see that.
Yeah, that's great to know, Ken. I love Philadelphia, you know, for its for a lot of reasons, American history, and but the art museum there actually has another piece that's in the book, Henry Tanner's Annunciation, which is one of my favorite pieces of art. But that's one of the things that I loved being able to do is make sure that, you know, in the book, I made sure that the editors knew in America where each of the pieces that are actually in America are from. And I wish I had known that about the Isenheim altarpiece before. I want people to be able to go and see these in person, you know, to whatever extent they're able. So, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to get back up to Philadelphia and see that one of these days.
Nah, it'd be great. If you're ever in town, let me know. We'll get you out there to see it. What were some of your pieces, favorite pieces that ended up in the book?
So I mentioned Henry Tanner's Annunciation, which is it's a wonderful way to reflect on Mary's, I think, almost her uncertainty at the message of the angel Gabriel. So that one certainly. In Washington, D.C., at the National Gallery of Art, there's a Murillo's The Return of the Prodigal Son. That was a real special moment in my life to get to go into the National Gallery and meditate on that. But I think my favorite, the all-time, you know, this piece has probably become my all-time favorite piece of art just because of where I am in my life at this point, is by Gerard van Honthorst. It's called The Holy Family in the Carpenter's Shop. and it shows the Holy Family, Jesus with Mary with her hand on his shoulder, and then Joseph plying his craftsman trade, and they're shrouded in darkness. And you know, as a husband and a father of you know, young children, you know, sometimes our lives just seem very shrouded in darkness, like we're doing this thing and we're shielded from the world, and you know, nobody sees it but us, and you know, yet somehow it's holy and it's beautiful. And you know, so I've grown deeply in my devotion to Saint Joseph over the last few years as well, and so I've loved that piece.
And looking at it now, the way the artist has incorporated the light and what have you is just it's brilliant. I can see where, you know, people could spend quite a bit of time, and no two people I think are going to get the same thing out of this. So it's not like the book's not like a critical piece on art where it's trying to explain what's in the work, right? It's more about each individual and how and the message that they'll get from it.
Right. So this is not a work of art history. I am a historian, but I'm not an art historian. And you know what this is about is about enabling people to have an encounter with the Lord. Every one of the essays has reflective questions that people can look at the piece of art, look at a particular detail, and then ask this question of themselves about their life, you know, their relationship with the Lord, their life here on earth, their relationships with others. That was the main goal of the book, is to get people asking those questions and having that conversation with the Lord and hopefully a deeper encounter.
Very good. Again, our guest in this segment is Derek Roddy. The book we're talking about is entitled Praying with Sacred Art, Pondering the Mystery of Redemption Through Visio Divina. It's published by Sophia Institute Press, available at sophiainstitute.com, locally in the Philadelphia area. Go over and see our friends at the St. Jude Shop. If you're going to make a drive to get there, you may want to call them first to make sure they have it in stock. If not, I'm sure they can get it for you in short order. I did cheat a little bit, Derek. I happened to – one of my favorite shows is The Journey Home. And I happened to watch a recording of when you were on there back in, I think it was 2023 maybe, and your own journey to the Catholic Church. And I was just wondering how much of that has a role in, you know, what you're doing today and this book in particular.
So it does. I was just out of graduate school the first time, and I love baseball, and I love good food, and I love architecture. So the young woman I was dating at the time, who is now my lovely wife of almost 20 years, we went to St. Louis for some baseball and some food, and she said on the way out of town, she said, I want to take you to this church. And it happened to be the Cathedral Basilica of St. Louis, and I was not yet Catholic, and my eyes didn't look at the floor. This thing is just majestic and magnificent. It's totally Byzantine mosaic on the inside. If your listeners haven't ever visited, it's also really, really enormous. It's like the fifth largest building in North America or something. Anyway, I started asking some very pointed questions about the Catholic Church and about church history, but I have always been aware that an encounter with beauty will draw us more fully to the Lord, and it did that in a specific way with me, and it opened up the questions, and I was received into the church within probably 8 months of that moment, and, you know, it's been the best decision I ever made. You know, the times when I've early on in my faith, I got to, you know, we got married a couple years after that, and we honeymooned in Italy and got to go to some of the most beautiful churches in all the world. And then, you know, I visited Spain a few years after that and got to, you know, see the great cathedral of Toledo and some of the art that's in the book, at the Prado Museum. So this recurring theme of God lifting me upward, through architecture, and then particularly putting beautiful things into my soul through art, has just been a recurring theme again and again.
No, it's a beautiful thing. The Catholic Church probably has more, as a whole, probably has more art than any other institution on the planet. And, yeah. You know, we hear the stories, you know, people that'll say, you know, we should sell it all and feed the poor. But, you know, that'll take care of them for a short period of time. But the role that's played, I think, not only in your own conversion, but the ongoing conversion of an awful lot of people would far outweigh, I think,
right.
You know,
Jesus said, Jesus said, you'll always have the poor with you, right? So, I think we need, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to start writing this series and that turned into this book, is I just want people to know that they can encounter the Lord through their eyes, right? The things that they see our eyes are windows to our souls. Right. And the things that we look at, the things we gaze on, will transform our souls. And, you know, ultimately it gets us to a point, if we start looking at sacred art, it gets us to a point where, you know, I'm sitting out on my front porch right now and I look at, you know, the trees change, the leaves changing colors, and, you know, think about the seasons, and that I am able to do more deeply, I think, because of looking at sacred art. And praying with sacred art, not just looking at it, but really having this conversation with the Lord as I look at it.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that at least comes into play for me is a lot of times in prayer, it's real easy to get distracted. And mm-hmm. so you can use a prayer word or something along those lines, like in Lexio, in order to bring you back and recenter you.
Right.
I think this idea of praying with sacred art in a lot of ways can try to, or will, help you to avoid those distractions, right? Because you've got something that you're visibly focused on, then it's not just with your eyes closed or trying to keep your mind focused without the image.
Right. We are incarnational beings. We have senses, and we ought not to think that prayer is something that needs to be void of senses and it's just an intellectual act, right? That would be a very Cartesian understanding, right? Separating the body and the spirit, and that's not what we're supposed to do. So that's why all the way, you know, through the history of our church, you know, we've got things like the rosary, the prayer beads help us to stay focused as we move them through our fingers, and, you know, the listening to music and singing, and, you know, St. Augustine says to sing is to pray twice, right? So all of these ways engage our senses, and the book that, you know, I've written that you have in front of you is just a way of engaging the sense of sight in the act of prayer.
And you mentioned at the outset that it started when you we're writing the articles for Catholic Exchange around Advent, and, you know, Advent's just a couple of weeks away now, so it'd probably be, if you're going to pick up a copy, now's probably the ideal time, because part one deals with six different images around the Advent season. And mm-hmm. it was interesting, because I turned to the first one, the Eve of the Deluge, and uh-huh. You're expecting, when you see the title, Praying with Sacred Art, and then you look at that image, and it's, you know, the king, you know, lounging back, his chalice, if you will, is empty, and looking not too crazy about what's going on in front of him as people were loading up into the ark. So, you know, art really is varied, and I thought that particular image was you could spend quite a bit of time with.
Yeah, and that, you know, Advent, we often think of the end of Advent with the preparation for the birth of Jesus, but the Advent season that the church gives us, it starts with, hey, folks, wake up and remember that God is coming back, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the Eve of the Deluge particularly is it's ripe for reflection in my own life or anybody else's life to say, hey, how am I approaching this life, this moment in this life? Am I ready for the Lord to come back?
Right. Or, you know, if I don't know how many of us are going to be here when he physically comes back, but, you know, meditating on those last four things, heaven and hell, death and judgment. And I think that particular piece will remind us of that. And I just know personally, if I meditate on those things, my life tends to be a little bit different than it is otherwise, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think we've gotten through the questions. I mean, one of the what's probably the greatest thing you hope that readers would take away from this?
I would my primary hope is that they begin, or, you know, if they're already engaged in an ongoing conversation with the Lord, that they have a new technique that they can draw from. If they haven't begun the deeper conversation with the Lord, that they might begin that conversation. So that's the ultimate goal is just to get people to be able to pray and enter into that conversation and a life of discernment, a life of ongoing connection with the Lord. Beyond that, you know, I include a little bit of, you know, the historical information or the kind of technical art information. If people take away, you know, some of those finer points of history and art technique, that's great. But ultimately, just, you know, even if you've never heard the term Visio Divina, you know, just know that anytime you gaze on something beautiful, that's an opportunity to meet the Lord there and begin an extended conversation, because the Lord wants to walk with you through every part of life.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I had never heard the term until I took a look at your book. And as I go through the pages, you know, a lot of times we're familiar with some of the sacred art that's out there that, you know, we see repeatedly. And as I go through your book, a lot of these images I've never seen before. Uh-huh. And so was there a way that or a process that you used? Were these images that you came across over time that you used yourself? How did you pick and choose from all the art that's out there?
Some of them were things that I had known, you know, for a number of years. Some of them I encountered while I was actually in the process of writing these columns. Because what I had to do is I had to go to each Sunday's gospel reading, and I had to pray with it. So I was doing Lectio Divina, and then I had to go to, you know, the Google search and you know, type in, you know, sacred art and whatever the main theme was, you know, or the particular story, and just see what was available, and then based on the things that had come out in my Lectio, I kind of chose some. Or sometimes, I think in the case of I think it was the Last Supper, there was one thing I had in mind as I did the Lectio, but then I got into looking at the various images of the Last Supper, and I thought I wanted to use one, and then, you know, it probably actually wasn't even available by copyright law. So I had to kind of shift. But then the one that I did find was, you know, it had all those particular themes, and I'm trying to look through here real quick to make sure I give the right reference. But the you know, it was a process, just a process of prayer, right? I was doing a process of prayer, and hopefully my own process of prayer is something that will enable others to have a deeper prayer life. So I just found it. It's The Last Supper by Peter Paul Rubens, and I should have known that, because over the course of this process, Rubens became my favorite artist. He's a Flemish artist from the Baroque period that did just some fantastic work, and I've got a couple of his, I think two or three of his pieces show up in there. So, yeah, I was really blessed to this process blessed my life, my prayer life, and I'm actually looking forward, now that Advent's starting here in a few weeks, to diving back in and seeing what the Lord opens up this time.
Very good. Our guest in this segment is Derek Roddy. The book we've been talking about is entitled Praying with Sacred Art. Pondering the Mystery of Redemption through Visio Divina. Again, published by Sophia Institute Press, available at their website, sophiainstitute.com. Locally here in the Philadelphia market, take a ride out to the St. Jude shop and pick your copy up there. We've got just about a minute and a half left before we go to the break. Derek, anything else you want to leave with our listeners before we part ways?
Mostly pick up a copy of the book and engage in this act of prayer. You mentioned it at the top. You can find more about me and my ongoing writing and work at my website, my name, Derek Rotty, DerekRotty.com. I'm available for interviews and retreats and things like that if it fits in the Lord's plan. And other than that, just I really hope that people will encounter the Lord more deeply.
Very good. Derek, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us. I certainly appreciate it. I learned a lot both from the interview and the book, and I'm sure our listeners did too. So thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Ken. God bless you.
All right. God bless you. Bye-bye now. So it's one of the benefits of having this job, if you will. I don't get a salary, but I do get advanced copies of the books, and this is one that I'll be taking a look at, especially as we go through the Advent this year with the section that's in here. So I encourage you to go out and pick up your own copy. You ready to go? All right, so that is the minute before the break, but we'll go ahead and take it early. Our caller or our interview for the next segment's already on the line. It's Michael Litchens, and we'll be talking about a book entitled The World of Jesus Apparitions. So just going to take a short break. Don't go away. Be right back.
You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio on WTMR 800, Camden, Philadelphia. Listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. We often think of the scripture where the disciples were walking to Emmaus, where they said, "Were not our hearts burning within us as Jesus spoke to us on the road?" As we travel along the road together in our Archdiocese of Philadelphia and Camden Diocese, we thank God for our loyal circle of family and friends. Please consider sponsoring one of our new programs in the name of your parish priest, family member, or friend. It would be a beautiful way of helping us to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ, our risen Lord. Give us a call at 610-527-2906 or visit us on the web at inhissign.com.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. This is your host, Ken Johnston. Again, I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio. Just a reminder that we frequently update the website, inhissign.com, especially with recordings of shows that you may have missed, or you want to pass along to folks. Maybe you heard a show and you know somebody that would be encouraged by it or learn from it. If you go to inhissign.com and click on Content and then Podcasts, you can go ahead and share those recordings with others. We're joined in this segment by Michael J. Litchens, He's an author, editor, and spokesperson in Colorado. And he's also the author of Weird Catholic Handbook and the former editor of Catholic Exchange, where you can find many of his articles on saints and the overlooked aspects of Christian history. Follow his Chestertonian adventures and obsession with old chapels at his website, mlichens.com. That's MLICHENS.com. Welcome back to the show, Michael. It's great to have you with us.
Always great to join you, Ken. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. And I think we mentioned, only had a few seconds to chat before we went live. You were here back in August, and we talked a little bit about Serenelli and Maria Goretti, and thoroughly enjoyed our time together then, and look forward to talking about this this other work, The World of Jesus Apparitions, written by Vincente Laszewski. I think I've got that right.
That's right.
I've got I've got a Polish friend who is constantly correcting me on my Polish pronunciation. So I practiced this one a few times before we came on the air. And
good.
Yeah. So again, that's The World of Jesus Apparitions. It's published again by Sophia Institute Press, available at sophiainstitute.com. And I say that, is it publicly available yet, Michael?
It comes out November 18th, so we're just a few days. If you want to pre-order it, it will come right to you on the 18th.
Very good. And I managed to get a copy from Sophia, and I can tell you it's beautiful. It's a for those watching on Facebook Live, I've got holding up the copy of the book, but it's a coffee table book. And when I first heard about it, Michael, I remembered having somebody, and I don't know if it was you or somebody else, that came on to talk about the other work that he had done on the world of Marian apparitions. And so most people, when they hear the word apparition, they usually leap to Marian apparitions like, you know, Lourdes and with Bernadette Subaru and the Miraculous Medal and all these other places that Mary's appeared. But in thumbing through this book, it looks like Jesus has made a fair share of his appearances as well, huh?
He has made a lot of appearances. When I was reading through this book, I was surprised at how much he appeared, especially within my lifetime, because that's just not something you consider too often. I think in a lot of Catholic circles, we like to think the resurrection happened, the ascension happened, and then Christian history just kind of took a snooze, and that's not it at all.
No. So in going through the book, again, it starts at the very beginning of Christian history, if you will. And then I think the last one I saw one from 1985, which is in Poland. And I'm not sure if Laszewski, if that's what caused him to or put it in his mind to do the work. But Jesus.
Was that Alicia Laszewska?
It was, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she died in 2012, so very much near in our lifetime. And she is a fascinating figure because she was not a practicing Christian for the majority of her life. She was a school teacher living in communist Poland. And she had a conversion experience through the charismatic renewal and started to experience the voice and then visions of Christ as well as other saints and the Mother of God after a retreat.
And excellent. And like I said, my Polish friend that corrects my Polish pronunciation, I think one other apparition of Jesus in Poland as well. But it looks like these have happened across many countries around the world. Was there any particular place that drew your attention more than others?
Yes. So probably my one I absolutely adored because I just never heard of her. Oh, is Maria Teresa Carloni. Her apparitions happened in Italy, but she's actually better known in the former Eastern Bloc, such as Poland, Lithuania, and those other countries that were behind the Iron Curtain. And the reason she's so well known is because in her mystical experiences included bilocation. And so she would actually visit people who were in prison, such as Blessed Stephen Bozinski, who was an archbishop and a very powerful spiritual writer who had encountered her, I guess you would call it second body, in a bilocation.
Interesting. That's one of those gifts I've been trying to get myself, and not happening because my life's
right?
so busy. It would be real nice to be able to be in two places at one time. But, you know, the fact that some people have, you know, Padre Pio and others that had that gift. So we mentioned that there are modern apparitions. And any of these apparitions or visions, were there physical results left behind that could prove or disprove that they were real?
Yes, there were physical results. Probably the most. The one that sticks with a lot of people is, of course, stigmata, which Padre Pio, as well as Mary Teresa Carloni, endured. Visible stigmata was endured also by St. Gemma Galani, though there's also invisible stigmata where you feel the pains but not have the marks. But that is an imprint of Christ in the most dramatic way possible. It's the five wounds of Jesus experienced on the body. St. Francis was the most famous stigmatic who had the almost
in his eyes
protruding.
Sorry about that.
No.
You're back. So we mentioned, I guess 1985 was the one that's most recent in the book. Are there any others that were in our time? Or is that the main one?
That's the main one. Marisa Teresa Carloni did die in 1983, so she experienced visions up until her death, so not too far. I know that's within my lifetime, and I'm sure for many of your listeners also within their lifetime.
Yeah. So when these apparitions have taken place, I know that there's always been some controversy within the church about whether or not they were real. I think about Immaculate and the Rwandans and the issues that they went through, the vision Bernadette Subaru and others, where people had a hard time believing that Mary or Jesus would appear to them. Was that the same thing found? Well, that's in the Marian apparitions. Is a lot of that same thing found with these apparitions of Jesus?
Oh, most certainly. Whenever anyone encounters Jesus and starts saying, I mean, you can imagine if your neighbor or even your best friend said, hey, I've been talking to Jesus and I can see him in the flesh, you'd probably initially have some skepticism. And that's healthy. That's understandable. So a lot of these visionaries would go through in the early ages, such as St. Margaret Mary, who gave us the Sacred Heart imagery. She had to endure a lot of questioning from the Inquisition, much like St. Teresa of Avila had to as well. So they would be instructed to even keep their vision secret or only tell their confessor. And that would be something that would be investigated. The church would, of course, want to, more than anything, make sure that if they, whatever visions or messages they're receiving still work within the church, that they don't contradict any of our dogmas or teachings. They don't encourage people to sin or disobedience. And that can take sometimes quite a number of years. So some of these visionaries, they've been, you know, looked through, and the church has said there's nothing doctrinally inconsistent here, but they haven't necessarily weighed in. And that might still, especially for the more recent apparitions, still ongoing investigations.
Very good. So in Marian apparitions, we hear, you know, consistent themes like repentance and prayer and going to her son Jesus. Is there more or less a consistent message that we get in the modern apparitions from Jesus?
Yes. One of the things that amazed me was how many of these visionaries, such as St. Gemma Galani, would receive these visions after their first communion. So it is very much tied in with the Eucharist. And coming back to all these teachings, is Christ suffering on behalf of us? A lot of us think the suffering stopped once he rose from the dead, but he still suffers for us. He still desires us, and it still pains him to not see us turning to him. And that's a vision, or a message, I should say, that you get again and again throughout these visions.
And when I flip to the back of the book, I think it's the last section, and it's a relatively long section compared to some of the others. It talks about Jesus in dreams, many people who converted from Islam. And it's like an odder God for me, because I just had this conversation with somebody where they were telling me that this was going on. And this kind of, nailed it for me as far as the actual details of what's going on.
Yes, that I had heard a little bit about this, but I didn't realize how often it was happening in the Muslim world, where people were having dreams of Jesus appearing to them and instructing them to convert, to seek out Christian communities to convert. And some of them are quite dramatic. He details one story about a man that he calls Muhammad, who was an ISIS fighter. So he was fighting with probably, I think almost, actually it's unarguable, that, the most terrifying Christian persecutors for the last 50 years. And he was told again and again to convert. And it was a Paul on the way to Damascus moment where it was struck him, and it was almost instantaneous, even as the Christian communities were suspicious, rightfully so, of his conversion. He still sought out Christ and sought out other Christians. So he went from a persecutor to a believer.
And in one of the pictures here, in it's got that they dream of Jesus, and it's all over the place. Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, Egypt, Sudan, Tunisia, mm-hmm. Afghanistan, as well as Greece and Turkey. So these it doesn't appear to be just isolated incidents. And maybe Jesus is doing this more and more in current times, huh?
Yes, it's a powerful reminder that Christ is never done working with us. He is never done with us at all until he comes back again. He is always trying to bring more and more souls to him. And that for me is a very encouraging one. He's much like the prodigal son. When you read the prodigal son was returning, his father ran to meet him in the road. And that's exactly what's going on here, is Christ is very active in bringing us to his church. We just have to let him.
And is there a reason why these may be more intriguing today than they may have been in the past?
I think it's more intriguing in all these apparitions, especially the modern ones, because they're happening in an age of secularism, of skepticism, and materialism, when we're supposed to not believe miracles can still happen. And yet they continue to occur and again and again, to a point where we can have this big, beautiful coffee table book to introduce people to these stories.
And the big, beautiful coffee table book that we're talking about is entitled The World of Jesus Apparitions, compiled by Vincente Leshevsky. He is not our guest today. Our guest is actually Michael Litchens, who's representing Sophia Institute and talking to us about the book. And I think a lot of times, Michael, people, they hear that we're supposed to evangelize, and people are, how am I supposed to do that? And I think one of the easy ways to do it is to pick up a copy of this book and leave it on your coffee table and, wait for the kids or grandkids or friends to, hey, what's that on your table, and pick it up and start paging through it, huh?
Absolutely. And I think if you have anyone who's interested in this or maybe is interested in Catholicism in general, a lot of people entered the church this year. This is a beautiful Christmas present. It's a stunning book, for one, but I just find the stories in here, so many of which I had never heard about, and I read a lot about Christian history. I was shocked by how many of these stories have occurred, and it's a wonderful, powerful reminder.
And I'm thinking of younger people, so I've got four kids between 24 and 41. And when you hand them something like this to take a look at, it's not mom or dad or grandpa or grandmom that's trying to convince them. It's it's here in black and literally in black and white and a whole lot of color pictures to go with it that'll do the explaining for you. Maybe pick up a copy and get familiar with a few of them. Were there any in particular that really jumped out at you? Maybe ones that you weren't aware of and made you want to dig a little deeper?
Yes. And I apologize. I should have practiced your name, but Venerable Wanda Malczewska, who was another Polish visionary, had some incredible visions similar to St. Gemma. And I had never heard of this woman. I had heard of St. Gemma, but never heard of Wanda. But she received visions after her first Holy Communion at age 8. And in fact, at her Holy Communion, she saw the uncreated light, you know, the light of God. She heard angels and heard the voice of the Lord speak to her and welcome her. And she endured a lot of pain and suffering, lost her mom at a very young age, saw her mom, through the grace of God, she got to see her mom on All Souls Day and was assured that her prayers for her mom were effective and that they would be reunited again. And she was a fascinating figure that just constantly received visions. And also the invisible stigmata, which again is the stigmata without the visible wounds being present, just the pains. And among the visions she received was to a prophecy for Poland and its need to adopt Mary as the Queen of Poland, which they had done before, but she was encouraging this devotion, especially in the early 20th century, right before Poland endured its darkest night during the World Wars.
Yeah, and, you know, great images. Like I said, I've got a Polish friend that I'm sure is going to jump right to this section, and I bet she's not heard of her either, which is pretty cool. The one that follows that, because I was trying to flip through the book to get to the one you were talking about, was one I'm a little bit familiar with, Mary of St. Peter and the Golden Arrow, and just everything that, you know, all these visionaries have gone through or experienced. You know, I can't imagine what it'd be like to, you know, be doing something and then all of a sudden, you know, Jesus appears and starts to reveal things to you. And it's almost it seems to be not the simple people as far as their literacy or what have you, but simple people in that they're not necessarily too worldly yet. Were a lot of these you mentioned a couple already that were young people. Was that I don't know if it's a majority, but a lot of them that experienced
a lot
that?
Of them, yes. Like I said, a lot of them, such as the two we just mentioned, St. Gemma and Wanda, and a few others, received visions after their first Holy Communion, which again I find fascinating because it means that a lot of these visions are tied, you know, directly to the Eucharist. But some of them, in a few cases, didn't receive any visions or any even conversion until they were much, much older, such as Alicia we talked about, who was a communist teacher for a long time, but converted.
Very good. And again, these have taken place all over the world and it on every continent. So certainly Jesus manages to get around. The other, you know, just stick with the Polish theme here. The other one, I believe, is St. Faustina, again, that gets quite a bit of press here in the book and maybe one that people are more familiar with.
Yes, she is. It's kind of hard to believe. Like, one of the things I was reflecting on this book is that both the Divine Mercy and the Sacred Heart devotions are relatively new in the course of Christian history, and yet I can't imagine a Catholicism without either. Like, you imagine not having the Sacred Heart devotion. It's just not possible, but yet that only dates back to the 17th century, it builds on the Catholic teachings, and it, of course, always has us return to the biblical teachings of Christ. But it's a fascinating view into just, you know, how much the church grows and changes over the years, though always remains the same in terms of its teachings.
And I'm assuming that the Sacred Heart, we get most of that from Margaret Mary Alacoque?
Yep, that is correct. It was through her direct visions, and it was somewhat controversial, even though they get referenced not only in her visions, their visions were referred to again in the Fatima visions when they mentioned that France could have been saved had the king heard St. Margaret Mary's pleadings to consecrate the nation to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And almost a century after St. Margaret Mary, of course, the French Revolution occurred.
So it just goes to show what happens when we don't pay attention. You know, I go back to, well, Marian apparitions with Rwanda and others, that a lot of these things can be avoided if we would just pay attention. Our guest in this segment is Michael Lichens. His website is mlichens, M-L-I-C-H-E-N-S.com. And he's with us today to talk about The World of Jesus Apparitions, written by Vincente Leshevsky, published by Sophia Institute Press, available at sophiainstitute.com. And this is a heavy one. If you're going to get it shipped, I don't know if Sophia charges by weight or not, but you may want to run over to the St. Jude shop here locally and pick up
Please
a copy.
Do.
Yeah. And, you know, I was telling this friend of mine, knowing that I was going to be talking to you today, Michael, and I actually went back and picked out my my copy of The Marian Apparitions. And just another beautiful book, kind of goes through in the same way, same author, in documenting all the ways that heaven tries to get through to us mortals through Mary and Jesus himself. And like I said at the outset, I think a lot of us are, when you hear the word apparition, more familiar with the Marian apparitions than we are with than Jesus himself. So if you're one that struggles with Mary providing the messages, here's a way to get it directly from Jesus' mouth.
Absolutely.
I got just a couple of minutes left. Michael, anything else for our listeners before we have to part ways?
Oh, I would just encourage people to get it. Sophia Institute usually charges about $5 for all shipping, so you're good on that. But do support your Catholic bookstores, especially in this time of year. It's a great time to be buying up gifts, stocking stuffers. And if you read through this, I recommend you don't have to read it from cover to cover in your first sitting. You can just do what I did when I first got it and just pick out the stories of, oh, I never heard of this, or I've always wanted to hear more about this. And each section is perfect for that.
Agreed. Even though it's on the coffee, you know, we tell you to put it on the coffee table, it may not be a bad one to have on the nightstand, and you just read about a different one before you go to sleep at night. But
great idea.
Yeah, well done, Michael. Thanks so much again for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. It was funny that our guest in the last segment was Derek Roddy, and I saw that you were an editor there at Catholic Exchange, and I think his book on sacred art it was a result of some of the work he had done with Catholic Exchange initially. So I don't know if you were a part of that.
Yes, I was his editor for years. He's a great man and a great author.
So go out and pick up both books, Praying with Sacred Art by Derek Roddy and The World of Jesus Apparitions by Vincente Leshevsky. Michael, thanks again for taking time out of your schedule to be with us. We certainly appreciate it and look forward to having you back.
Thanks, Ken. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. God bless. Take care now. Bye-bye. So once again on this Wednesday afternoon, hopefully you learned a little something, whether it was from Bill Wynn and talking about René Girard and mimetic theory and his insight on memes, which is mimic evolve, M-E-M-E. It's not something that they just came up with the advent of Facebook and social media. It's been going on for quite a while. And hopefully you learned a little bit about that in the 4 o'clock hour if you were able to be with us. And And in both the in cases of both of the books we talked about in the 5 o'clock hour, being able to use them in prayer while one of them will give you the images and brief descriptions of the artwork and maybe how to use it in prayer. This one on the apparitions of Jesus to come to understand that those that had the visions and the message that Jesus was trying to get across to those who he came to. And especially here in 2025, we're getting ready to wind down another liturgical year and start preparing for Christmas in the Advent season in just a couple of weeks. And, you know, now more importantly, I think, than ever, the importance of our Catholic faith and our need to make regular attendance at Mass, not just on Sunday, to participate and go and make the sacrament of confession at least monthly, more frequently, if you can or need to. And, you know, just make use of all that our Catholic Church and Catholic faith has to offer. We talked about a lot of times in this hour, each week we talk about books that are available to help you to grow in your faith, but the sacramentals, the rosary, and again, everything that our church has to offer. And these are trying times. There's a lot of turmoil in the world. Hopefully, I didn't see the news yet today. I think the House of Representatives was supposed to get together today to vote to reopen the government, and then we've watched what that's done for better or worse over the last 44 days, whatever it's been. Just all the angst and anxiety that's in our world, and you know, as Christmas approaches and people worried about having to purchase gifts and put food on the table for holiday meals, it's a great time to really get connected with our faith and to grow closer to Jesus. And one of the ways I do that is through his mother. The Blessed Mother has, you know, played a pivotal role in my own conversion over the last 30-plus years. And she will bring us to her son. That's her goal. We don't worship her. She's not on par with God. And every one of her apparitions and all her instructions are to go to her son. And we do that one person at a time with Bill Wynn in that 4 o'clock hour and talk about Rene Girard and personal sanctity. That's the key. If you want to change the world, become a saint. If you become a saint, then the people around you will be encouraged to become saints. We're not going to do it by edict. The Pope's not going to do it by some document that he produces. The government's not going to do it for us. We have to do it individually, and the main way that we're going to do that is to become saints. Hopefully the shows on Wednesday and all the shows here at Indocyne Catholic Radio help you in that pursuit of becoming a saint. So again, I want to thank you for whatever time you are able to be with us today, and I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. I don't do it often enough. Thank you, Patrick, for making sure my voice gets out over the airwaves, and we'll talk to you next week. Until then, take care, and God bless.